Did you know you can sponsor this podcast and reach thousands of engaged developers? Well, you can. Look at the Sponsor Us section on the DjangoChat.com website for more information.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Today we've got with us Thibaut Colles, who's a DSF board member and Wagtail core team member and all-round Django hero. Hello, Thibaut. How are you?
Hi, folks. I'm doing good. Freshly back from DrangoCon US. Good to be here.
So you've recovered from the jet lag, yeah?
Oh, honestly, not just yet, but close enough.
Okay.
So we want to talk about a lot of things, but I think the big one is board elections for the Django Software Foundation are on the 25th, which will be 9 days from when this comes out. So maybe we could talk about, you're a new board member, or what do you want to say about the upcoming elections? And then we want to ask about what it's been like 1 year into your term.
Ooh, okay. I guess can maybe start a few years back, like what it feels like to go through the journey of becoming a board member. So for me, I work at an agency in the US called Torchbox. We do quite a bit of open source at Torchbox, but it's definitely only one part of the many things that you do as a dev there. And it took me, I guess, quite a few years to understand that with open source, there's plenty that's happening outside of those jobs. And I guess find different ways to be involved as a contributor and then through the maintainership and then leadership. So I guess the Django board specifically, it took me quite a while to realize that even the DSF was a thing separate from the Django project and that it had elections going for its leadership positions. And I guess I think once you get there, you start to project yourself in those kinds of roles. You wonder if you have the time and so on. And yeah, I guess the time is right now for the board for the next year. So very keen that we do a better job at explaining what the DSF and the board does, and also practically the step-by-step process of becoming a board member. Yeah, where should I spend more time? What do you think is helpful to know about?
Well, so the current election, there's 7 members in the board, right? And the current election is for 4 of those positions.
Yep.
Right. So there's quite a, you know, quite a big opportunity for people.
Yeah, it's I think definitely the biggest we've had in years. So for me, my involvement only started with the DSF about a year ago with the board elections then. And board has 7 members, but we follow a staggered term, which is why last year we had 3 people up for election, three positions, and this year 4. And yeah, I guess we're the group that gets to decide the direction of the foundation, at least where the funding goes, how actively we look for it, how we coordinate other people. So those 4 new members, that's a majority on the board, effectively, they'll be able to have quite a big say in where the DSF spends its time and resources.
I wanted to ask you both, because you, Will, you used to be on the board, right? And Thibaut, you're currently on the board. So, I mean, I'm interested in Django. I want to help push Django forward. What am I signing up for if I run for the board?
So Thibaut, you go first because you're living it, and then I'll talk about what it was like a couple years ago.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess in my mind, there's the business as usual of operating a medium-sized international charity foundation, and then there is things that you might want to do on top of that as someone who's keen to move forward the community. So like day to day, the biggest thing the board does is super simple, is meeting once a month to decide on grants, where we spend our funding, any current events, how we respond to them as the board's day to day management of the foundation. And the biggest thing that the foundation does by far, just to be super clear, is funding the fellows who are paid employees of the foundation who work on Django. The board itself, aside from hiring the fellows and making sure they keep happy, we don't manage them day to day. That's separate. So yeah, as a board member, once this kind of business as usual is taken care of, you get to decide, okay, do I want to spend more time on the fundraising side of things? Do I want to spend time with initiatives like Django Girls, the Django Cons, Django.space to achieve specific goals within our community? Do I want to go for even more blue sky things? So for me, for example, the blue sky things are making Django as accessible as possible, reducing the carbon footprint of Django projects out there, and just the marketing side of things, making Django more competitive with other frameworks. Will your Blue Sky things, I assume, were quite different by then, or maybe there's some similarities?
No, I'm really excited to hear. I think I agree with your overview and the fact that you have those things: accessibility, marketing, global footprint. I strongly think everyone on the board should have Blue Sky areas that they want to do in addition to the day-to-day, because it can be easy to get caught up in the day-to-day things. And one of the things I noticed about the board is that most people don't know about it. And even people at Django Cons who know that a board exists have no idea what it does on a regular basis. And so as with many things in Django, there's so many roles that people are doing that don't have any recognition or acknowledgement. So that's one thing I've tried to do, is talk about what the board does, because I realize, how would anyone know if we on the board don't talk about it? But so what was different when I joined? Well, one thing was we had one-year terms. So we added the staggered two-year terms because we noticed that it took a year to understand what the board actually was doing day to day. And then that second year to start implementing and making changes. So a staggered terms was better. It also, with annual elections, sometimes people would show up, finally get their feet wet, and then maybe not be elected in the next election, right? So even as someone on the board thought, this is a great person, I want them to be around, they, you know, didn't market themselves or whatever reason. And so someone else came on the board and they didn't really get a chance to make an impact on the board. So that was a big reason for the two-year terms. But I'm curious how it is now, because when I was on the board, there were three roles. So there was four roles: president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. And then there were three other members. And the president, so for me, it was Frank Wiles and then Anna. They did the most work by far. The secretary did a bit of work. The treasurer did a lot of work. The treasurer before me was a little bit of a, like the professor of the dark arts at, you know, Hogwarts, because the role was just unmanageable. And so that was one of the things I just wrote about it, that we on the board were able to make it a little more manageable, I hope. I agree. I think the board does a lot of things, and I think you should go onto the board and be on the board having at least one Blue Sky area in addition to the day-to-day, because the day-to-day can easily consume your time. And I think it's also less rewarding to just be keeping the lights on for Django rather than having initiatives that you want to push and see through. But Carlton, one of the big things I noticed, and Thibaut, I'd like you to talk about this, is that the fellows and the board are very separate. I mean, the treasurer pays the fellows and the fellows write reports, but there's a fellowship working group that ostensibly is in charge of the fellows. The board doesn't tell the fellows what to do. So, you know, if not for the fact that I knew Carlton so well, I feel like it's easy for there to be a little bit of a lack of communication between the board and the fellows.
It's one of the things that over the years, like the fellow role when I was doing it was totally autonomous, basically. You were trusted to get on, but there wasn't any supervision, really. There wasn't much oversight. You'd communicate with the people on the forum. You communicate with the contributors on the list. But there hasn't been any direction. I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people have voiced. We need more direction to be able to push forward. We need to solve this problem of a sort of technical vacuum. And so the fellowship program is structured such that the fellows can continue, they can keep the framework going, and we can keep making the small changes. Like, you know, if you look over the last few versions, there's been loads of nice features gone in, really nice quality of life and performance improvements and, you know, stuff with the ORM deepening. But there haven't been these kind of major headline features. You know, Django Tasks is hopefully coming in this release or the next release. So that's like the biggest one, but that's kind of been missing for quite a long while, I think. And so one thing I think as an ex-fellow that I'm excited about is a push to try and provide more technical direction toward Django to help us push forward again.
Yeah, I agree 100%. To me, it's also not just direction, but simply speaking, coordination between the different groups. I think the fellows, you know, they're hired primarily to look after Django, the code base, board primarily to look after the foundation, steering council we've not discussed yet, have their own remits as well. And it's not really like spelled out for any of those roles, how you're meant to collaborate with other people, plainly speaking. And I guess as a board member in particular, you know, it takes quite a bit of time to get up and going with your own role, let alone consider how other people can work with you. So yeah, you mentioned will the stagger turns not being a thing. Like it definitely takes 3-6 months to onboard as a new board member. And by then you get to decide, okay, like how do I actually work with other people? How do I make like my own things happen? So yeah, this kind of coordination definitely requires, I think, upfront thinking of how those groups on paper are meant to work together.
Could you talk about how the roles are decided these days? Because in my experience, you know, it's not you don't just come in as president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. You know, you sort of have the first meeting, and it's, you know, there's the old board members are there for half the time, and then yep. You come in and then you quickly decide on who's doing what role without understanding what it means to be necessarily. So maybe you could speak to how do you see the four positions and how might someone new to the board, you know, put their hand up for one of those roles?
Yeah, I can tell you how it was for me. It's very similar to what you just said. Spent 15 minutes on the previous board's meeting going through, you know, the day-to-day. And then we had this thing coming up where we had to decide our roles. And yeah, I guess.
That sounds familiar. Yeah, yeah, unfortunately.
Plan is very different for this selection. Each of the four roles, we're going to write proper documentation for each of them. We know some of which we already have, but making sure that people have access to this documentation ahead of this actual meeting. Making sure that if multiple people want the same position, they can prepare statements ahead of those meetings so that they get mm-hmm. to, you know, project themselves. And so that next phase is the other board members voting. Okay, I think this or that person should be secretary, this or that president, in case multiple people want the same role. So yeah, for me, I was very keen to be president in my first year as board member and didn't make it. So, you know, I want to make sure that the new people that we get to appoint this year, they have all the resources they can get to give it their best shot.
So just to be clear, the decision is made in the meeting, in that 10 minutes at the end. It's now let's decide.
It's very tight for time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Chaim and I served together, and I know that one of the things we worked on before he was president, and then he was president, I think, for a year while I was there, is trying to offload some of the responsibilities of the president because the president has a lot of administrative and kind of duties that consume them rather than being able to, I don't know, lead or project. So I guess what is your take on how the president role is now? And then, you know, if you or someone else takes it on, what do you think it should be doing?
Ooh, it's a tough question. I guess to me, first of all, I should say that I definitely feel like, you know, we talk a lot about the burden of volunteering in open source. To me, it does feel like if you go for being the president of an organization like the DSF, you kind of should know what you're getting yourself into and have some amount of time settled aside for that. So yeah. I definitely feel like, first of all, you should expect coming in to spend, I don't know, 2 to 5 hours a week maybe on that kind of role. And if it doesn't feel too appropriate, then I guess we have to think of options to reduce that.
I guess, executive director, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about this quite a bit. The other... oh, no, don't laugh at the same time. The other thing that we've discussed quite a bit is the working groups. So the whole board delegating their responsibility to volunteers has been working quite well. Room for improvement, you know, but still... so yeah, I guess to me, at the end of the day, presidents, their responsibility first and foremost should be to coordinate all the other people, make sure they're happy with what they're doing. And that's like about an hour or two, hopefully. Carlton.
I wanted to ask about the working groups. You mentioned the working groups. So the idea was that the board is only 7 people. They can't possibly do all the tasks that there are to do. So the board needs to be more directive rather than executive, if that means they need to be able to say, okay, we'll set the direction, but then the working groups go off and do it. How is the working groups going? Because there was I saw several pull requests on the GitHub repository to set them up, but I don't know if they've managed to get
well,
functioning.
Let me provide historical context before Thibaut says how it is now. So we had this discussion, you know, modeled on the PSF, the Python Software Foundation, because their board does like decides what other people do, and then they have working groups that do the doing. And sometimes board members are on the working groups. From my experience, we recognize that the board, you know, couldn't do everything that needed to be done. And so we tried to take some steps to have working groups, but I think people just didn't appreciate how much time it was going to take. So if people are thinking, oh, it's 1 hour a week, that amount of time is just enough to catch up on emails. It's not enough for a board member to oversee a working group, let alone to push it through. So at least when I was there, I felt like most of the working groups stalled out because you need more time just to manage them. And then sometimes it becomes easier as a board member just to do it yourself, which reinforces the bad pattern we're trying to get out of. So I think what you were saying, Thibaut, about expectations around commitment, I think we do a disservice by saying, you know, 1 hour a month, when I think the reality is it's at least an hour a week and probably more like two and up, depending on the position. But you tell us how it is now.
Yeah. Well, 1 hour a month, like that's just a bare minimum. And if you can't do that, then there's not much of a point in being a director at all. And yeah, definitely 1 hour a week, I think, is a good actual like minimum. Yeah, the working group, I think we've had quite a rough start, to be completely honest. It takes a while, I guess, to get going with the new concept and find people out there who are interested in the specific groups, make sure that, you know, they work well together. But we do have, I think, two to three working groups that are working reasonably well at the moment. First one that I've kept tabs of that has started is the social media working group. And we've had quite a few people involved with that had no prior DSF, like foundation involvement before. And the latest one that I've been involved with somewhat is the fundraising working group, which is a much more critical topic. And again, we have a few board members involved, obviously, but we have two to three people who, again, Priya, Stephanie, have no involvement with other DSF activities. So yeah, I guess one thing that I really like, aside from getting those extra people on board, is also the added transparency to the process. It's very clear who's a member of those working groups. It's very clear how they are meant to report to the board and the rest of the DSF. And also it's very clear what they're responsible for. So it should make it quite a bit easier for people to understand exactly how the foundation functions and for people to find the specific areas where they can help.
Yeah, there's visibility in how to get involved as well, right? Because, oh yes, I want to, you know, help shout about Django. Well, okay, I can join the social media group. I think that's been amazing, by the way. The Feature Fridays, I'm loving the fact that the social media accounts are actually active and they've got a personality, and sometimes they retweet or sometimes they reply or sometimes, and it's like, okay, that's not just the blog. And then the blog posts have been more exciting than the Feature Fridays posts have been, you know, so it all just adds to a bit of, oh, actually Django, there's something going on with Django.
Feature Fridays, 100% credit to our social media group and Bhuvnesh in particular, that didn't come from the board at all. They just picked it up, created the concept, have been running it ever since. And yeah, people love it.
I know in our notes, there's been different amounts of people who've nominated themselves or been nominated for the board historically, sometimes as much as 30, sometimes 12. In your mind, is there a minimum level of activity or involvement that makes sense to put yourself forward? Because on the one hand, you certainly don't need to be a core contributor to Django to be on the board. And in fact, we probably want less of that. But sometimes when I was there, you'd get people who say, I just heard about Django, you know, in my college class, and I'd like to be on the board. And that's, you know, that I feel like we do a disservice by not saying there is some level of engagement probably required before you can be a serious candidate.
Yeah, definitely. I guess in my mind, I do feel like it's a good challenge for us if we have so much interest that we have to help signpost things a bit and make it clear who has what experience. So I love that challenge. I'll happily go for the 30 candidates on the ballot if we do want to get there. I guess just setting expectations, I'd want to see people who have about a year's worth of awareness of what Django and the DSF are, and also see themselves being able to commit 2 hours a week, say, for the next 2 years. So I guess it's people who have enough past to see, understand what we're doing, and also enough that they know they're going to be sticking around with this for quite a bit.
I like that response. All right, Carlton, you take it.
Well, it just, okay, so then there's two things we've identified, two possible levels of commitment that we've identified already. One is to run for the board, to be a board member. The other is, it perhaps a step down from that, is to find a particular working group that you want to engage with and join that.
And it was, when you say find a working group, we do have quite a lot of things that we know aren't up to scratch with what we want. So, you know, we compare ourselves with the PSF quite a bit. PSF has 20 times our budget, but, you know, we still want to kind of meet their level of visibility and operational effectiveness. So, yeah, I would say rather than just looking for a specific working group, also just proposing the ones that are missing. Marketing is a big one for us that's missing at the moment. And I think there's quite a few things as well around individual members of the foundation, making sure that we make the most of people who are keen to be involved with Django longer term. Yeah, that's the two ones that come to mind.
Okay.
Maybe I ask a question to you, Thibaut. So if I'm thinking about running for the board, I'm not, but like hypothetically someone is, and they say, on the marketing front, you know, the Django Project website needs a redesign because it is a little bit old. So this is something Carlton and I worked with Paolo in his agency quite a lot on, and we didn't quite get it over the line. How would you see that playing out in a way where it actually happens? Like what would someone need to do in terms of, is that something that a board member should do? Is that a working group thing? Because the problem with Django is always we're volunteers and committees, and sometimes things can get stopped even when a majority of people want to push forward.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's not easy. You know, it's one of the challenges with Django being so community driven. I think it's a big asset for us compared to the WordPress BDFLs of the world, but still is a challenge that community-driven means coordination. So I would say, like, if you want to achieve this specific thing, the best thing you can do by far is still to try and get elected and get that seat at the decision table, so to speak. Obviously, you know, we don't want every single possible improvement to Django out there to require someone be elected to achieve it, but it does help in making sure that it has the right visibility in the decision-making circles, and also that we're in the right place to find the funding for it, should that require funding. So the website, for example, that strikes me as something that should be achievable within the working group. We do have a website working group that's in the process of being formed, but I would assume that it will be sped up dramatically if we had someone at the board level making this their priority.
Also, having their priority helps you get elected, right? Because you've got something to say when you're in your candidate statement. It's like, this is what I actually want to go and push forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's easy for people, you know, to think of their elections as just like stating who they are and stating the things they could bring to the DSF. Personally, I also like people to be quite critical, to be completely honest, and hold the previous boards to account on, okay, this is what I think we should be doing, and this is where I see the gaps. And yeah, I think that people will react very well if you identify gaps that are correct compared to how they perceive it from their side.
I just realized, I don't think we talked about who actually votes on this, because there's the board, and then there's 200 or so individual members, and then there's everyone else. So someone listening, if you're not an individual member already, you don't get a vote. You should apply to become an individual member. But I guess this episode is targeted at those 200 people, and then also at people who don't know that there's this individual step that you can be nominated for, and one of the primary perks is voting on board elections
and voting on steering council elections, which I'm sure we'll discuss soon after. Definitely those people being able to understand what the foundation does, Django's direction, and also obviously registering to then be eligible for voting. That's quite critical for us.
Yeah, I'll put a link to the individual members, because to be honest, I didn't know about it for several years, and I think Adam Johnson nominated me for it, and and then I got it, and I was like, oh, now I know about this thing. And then, you know, then I was on the board, so I got kind of pulled in. So I think the visibility and just of how it all works is important. So I'll put a link to that. The bar is, I don't want to say lower, but it's individual members are meant to be the whole community. So it can be community, it can be code. It's a much broader, and I would say it may be a little bit less requirements than to be a board member. I don't know. What do you two think of making a distinction between the two?
Yeah, so individual membership is about recognizing a contribution to the Django community, but that's in you know, the community writ large, not just you were a committer to Django Core, or not just that you maintained a package, or not just that you helped with a meetup, or you helped with a conference, or you gave a talk, or what did you do that pushed forward Django in some way? That's enough, right? It's meant to be much more than just the code side of it, because the community is much more than that.
Yeah, there's one, sounds gonna sound a bit petty, but one thing I really dislike about the DSF is the S. Why are we the software foundation? We should be the community foundation first and foremost. And the bar is really high these days to contribute code to Django, like just way higher than it should be, in my opinion, and definitely higher than a lot of people can meet without, you know, years of experience. So definitely these days we try hard to recognize people who contribute to the community, not just the software. And I guess by the book, our definition is recognizing contributions that are substantial or sustained. Sustained meaning you do it over time. So these days the cutoff is kind of you've done something positive, tutorial, conference attendance, conference speaker, organizer, over maybe like a 6 month period, that's substantial or sustained enough for us to say, okay, great, let's have you on board.
Did you know you can sponsor this podcast and reach thousands of engaged developers? Well, you can. Look at the sponsor us section on the DjangoChat.com website for more information.
Okay,
brilliant. So anyone can be nominated, but then the board reviews the nominations, right? That's how it goes. That's one of the board duties in a meeting, is looking at least when I was on the board, there'd be 2 to 8 people nominated, and we'd kind of look around the room and be like, does anyone know these people? Okay, if we do, you know, they're probably in. If we don't, let's ask someone about it, because there's some minimum of involvement in the community.
We do it much more async these days. That's very similar otherwise.
Well, I was going to just swing the topic slightly. Have you got a question on the same point, or?
I just wondered if you could tell people, what does a 60-minute board meeting look like in terms of what things do you go through, and then what would you want to change with the 4 new board members? Because I think people have no idea.
This is such a big topic, Will. In particular, because I'm very keen to become president, if I can pull it off.
Well, no, yeah, this is good. Be the change.
There's lots of things in those meetings that are must have business as usual, that I'd rather we do much more asynchronously, if we could raise the expectation that board members have to be around for more than an hour a month. So up to an hour a week or more. I guess plain and simple, nominations of new individual members, grants that require our approval, any other ongoing business with sponsors that might require the board's approval. And then topics depend quite a bit based on what the DSF does year to year, whether that's the Malcolm Tredinick Prize, whether that's DjangoCon support, the elections, the campaigns we do, changes quite a bit.
The survey, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if it makes you feel better, when I joined the board, the discussions around funding various conferences took up 30, 40 minutes of the meeting. So it was just a complete, not a good use of time. So one of the things we changed is we said, okay, right, if we approve it, we have a set amount for, you know, like Western Europe versus, and in the US versus globally. Just so we didn't, because people can request different amounts, and then you're playing a game of like, who are these people? And I would have to email someone at the PSF, because often they would submit there. And, you know, usually it's okay, but especially if it's in a location where it's somewhat remote, you know, how do you know that it's legitimate? Those absolutely should be async. And we did shrink those down, I think, to 10, 15 minutes at the end through those things. But it really doesn't need to be discussed in the meeting at all, I don't think. So it could be worse, is what I'm trying to tell you. It was worse.
And definitely, you know, there's been discussions about the DSF having an executive director. For now, we do have our assistant to the board, Catherine, who helps us a lot with this kind of research ahead of the meetings. So it is going well. It could go better, but we do have these kinds of tasks done up front rather than during the meeting.
Okay, Carlton, you go.
Incremental improvement is the Django way, right? We don't have to, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be a little bit better than it was before. That's how we roll. Thibaut, you said two things that I want to pick up on. You talked about, we've mentioned twice the steering council, but as a way into the steering council, you just said something about contributing code being too hard, and it should to getting code into Django being too hard. And there's this massive trade-off between we want new features, we want new stuff, but also the stability guarantees that Django has to provide because people want to pip update it and know that their deployment isn't going to break. And we've got this trade-off. What's your kind of take? How could we change the way we're doing it to make development in Django more dynamic?
I guess I should say, first and foremost, I appreciate the stability of Django. My concern in trying to move things along faster is that we do need to make sure Django as a framework for Django users stays competitive compared to the other tools out there. Just a simple example in Python, one of the big things these days is type annotations. And I think Django has yet to find its position on this. And it's feeling like it's starting to be a bit late for Django to decide whether types are in or out and what to do about it. So just, yeah, I'll leave it there. Practically speaking, I do feel like we want Django to be competitive for its users. And also as far as contributors, people have a finite amount of time they get to spend on open source. And they can't tell their boss, hey, there's a very simple improvement to Django. It turns out I'm going to have to spend 10 hours on it rather than just 1 hour. So we have to be careful there. I guess from my perspective, the biggest thing we could improve that wouldn't compromise on stability is just decision-making. Arriving at a picture of, okay, this change is good enough, or okay, this change needs to be done in this or that way in a few minutes discussion rather than 6 weeks email thread. I appreciate, you know, we're async and community driven, but it does feel like if we had a better process in place, people who more proactively curate those types of decisions will be able to shrink down that phase of the process.
Okay, that's interesting.
I just want to follow up for people applying, like, is there a good resource on like what each role? I know, sorry, I'm going backwards, but I'm just thinking about the fact you're secretary. We haven't asked you what the secretary actually does. Like, is for someone coming in, is there an up-to-date, like, I know there's internally, there was at one time documents on like, what does the role maintain? But is there a place so people know what's expected of a secretary versus a vice president versus a treasurer versus a president?
Definitely, we need to still get better at this. So definitely by the time that the upcoming board members look at those roles, this will all be public. And it'll be a definition of what the secretary does, what each of the officer roles does. I do want to stress again that people do get to decide as board members. We're all equally elected. We get to decide what those roles entail. But I think there's definitely value in documenting a baseline of what those roles should do. So secretary, for example, the biggest discovery for me a few months into the role, I was realizing I was meant to be in charge of social media communications, amongst other communications. So, Carlton, you mentioned the flavor of the social media responses and so on. You've probably seen my work right there, trying to, I guess, make it, you know, more casual, more two-way rather than a one-way broadcast.
That's working really well.
Great.
Steering Council, do we still want to keep talking about that?
No, absolutely. We want to talk about the Steering Council. So, okay, so we want to make the decision-making process quicker or smoother in Django in order to help speed up the way that contributions are processed or can be processed. Is that something which falls to the Steering Council? And what is the Steering Council? And is that the locus of that kind of decision-making, or should it be something somewhere else?
I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer here. I guess, as you said, in the Django world, we do try and make those kinds of improvements incrementally, both to the code and to the organization around the code. So to me, it does feel like, okay, up to that point, the Steering Council does formally, in their definition of what they do, they're meant to be actively steering the direction of the project. So I do look at this this role and think, okay, we have to incrementally get them to do better at that. I guess on paper, I would expect that the board is ultimately responsible for the direction of Django as a whole. But, you know, we want to be very careful when we separate the decision making for people who have the expertise technically and for those who have the expertise as far as community building. So yeah, I don't think the steering council has to do this, to get back to your question, but it does strike me as the best instrument we have at this point in time to do this. Obviously, it's really helpful when people who aren't on the council step in and try and, you know, people like you, Carlton, spend lots of time curating possible things that feel like they are within the realm of feasibility, connect the dots on who should talk to whom to get things going. But it strikes me that, yeah, there's definitely a case for people who do this to have a specific job title, air quotes.
And there's going to be a steering council election as well. Like, not the first of all, we've got the board election, and then there's a steering council election coming up soonish, sometime in the autumn or spring, right?
Yeah. And mechanism there is quite similar, to be completely honest. Like Will mentioned, there's a need for people who are working on Django to be registered as individual members in order to be eligible to vote on those elections. So definitely do that. Submit your self-nomination as individual member so you get to vote in those elections. And then that's, we have a phase where we ask for candidates. Steering Council, compared to the board, does have quite specific eligibility requirements, which some people have expressed an interest in changing, but it does feel appropriate for there to be some amount of requirements of understanding of the direction of open source in Django and of you know, technical aspects of the project. And then once we have those candidates that are eligible to be elected, the secretary of the board, which is me, will put together the ballots and have a membership vote on who they want for the next council. And we don't want a repeat of the last election. We want a good amount of eligible candidates to choose from. And we want them, I guess, again, in my opinion, to be quite critical of the current state of Django and to give us a vision of how they'd evolve decision-making in the whole Django community and the steering council specifically.
Yeah, I mean, so just for people who don't know, last time there was the steering council election came on the back of a board election, and we didn't do the outreach, we didn't do the messaging, I don't know, but we only had four people stand, and there's meant to be five people on the steering council. So it's been shorthanded for this entire cycle, and we need at least five people. We needed to be fully staffed. So, you know, if you're involved in Django, do think about it. I think there's a real tension with the steering council, because it's ultimately, it currently stands, it's responsible for the technical direction of Django. And so it does require at least some members who are, you know, deeply involved in the technical development of Django currently. But if we limit it to people who are deeply involved in the current technical direction of Django, we're going to have a very homogenous board. It's not going to represent the wider community very widely, very well. Contrast to the DSF board. The DSF board has been quite diverse. It's, you know, historically, the last 10 years or so, you look at it, it's had a quite diverse profile, whereas the steering council, because it's been restricted to old core contributors, but essentially has been all white men. And that's not Django, because you go to a Django con and that's not the audience and that's not the user base. So how, I keep asking about how we can balance different trade-offs, but how can we balance this need for sort of technical awareness or technical familiarity with what's going on in Django with a desire to have a steering council that's representative of the wider user base?
I guess definitely in my mind, step one is to be transparent about the fact that we have this issue of diversity in our decision-making. The board is very diverse, steering council very much not so. And once we've agreed that we do have this as a problem, make practical steps, both you know, as far as the process, the theory of what the steering council does, and practically reaching out. You know, you mentioned outreach being an issue in the past elections, possibly. This feels like something that's quite a simple win for us. You know, people who are on the board, people who are having those discussions, they have the network and they'll know the individuals who might be able to fill those gaps. I guess something else in my mind is definitely thinking of this beyond the past expertise with Django Core and looking at the wider ecosystem of Django. It definitely feels right to me that we'd have people on the steering council that might represent more commercial interests. Companies that use Django day to day as users, I'm sure they have very competent technical decision makers there. Thinking of my background with the Wagtail project, I do have quite a few colleagues. So Matt Westcott and Sage Abdullah, for example, that have been making technical decisions as far as quite a prominent package for years, if not decades by now. I see no reason that those people couldn't also stand for elections for Django Core and to some extent, you know, the whole Django package community.
Anything else on the board or the steering council? There are some other things we want to talk about, but is there anything else you wanted to say on those or ask Carlton?
I guess to me, I should say that at the end of the day, I think we all need to realize that even with Django being community driven, it's not going to drive itself. And we do need people, specific people, to step in and go for those roles. And I want to say, like, again, in the world of open source, we do tend to think of this as a service to the community. But to me, it's also quite clear what would happen if we didn't have a functional steering council or a functional board. And I think I want people involved who see that side of things as well and help drive us further away from the pitfalls of, you know, commercial VC-funded open source and still allow us to navigate like this current set of challenges. So community-driven, but we do need competent and motivated individuals, and we'll be looking for you if you don't come for us.
Why did I get into open source at all is because I was building a business around based on Django, and you know, I needed the packages that I was contributing to. I needed to know they were going to keep working, and it's, you know, if you've got an interest in Django, then you know, keep it going. You said something about staying competitive, and I was trawling through the Django developers mailing list like a day or two ago, and I found a decade plus old issue saying that if we didn't have a better front end story to write immediately, then Django was doomed. Oh, do we really need to stay? I mean, don't we just stay competitive naturally? Doesn't it happen over time?
How harsh of an answer do you want, Carlton?
No. Come on. Let's.
If you look at the numbers on the Stack Overflow developer survey, for example, it is very clear that Django is working very well for current Django users. It is not so clear that people who don't already use Django do start using it and keep with it. We're very popular with people who are new to coding, and they take the Django Girls tutorial and they're very happy having their first experience with them. But beyond that, we do have quite a few frameworks out there that have marketing teams with budgets in the millions and that use it to gain that mind share. And on the technical merit standpoint, you could argue that Django has the tools that people need to build websites. But I would say that that's true to the extent of, you know, sites that have following a specific pattern. I guess for front end specifically, there's been lots of discussions, API first, API maybe, single page applications, and so on. Personally, I do quite like React. I do believe there are quite a few.
Hang on, are you on the right show, Thibaut?
I do believe there are quite a few things that we'd be better off if we stole from the hype-crazed front-end ecosystem. One of them being UI components in templates. And there is some innovation there in the package ecosystem, but I really think it's about time we move some of this innovation from packages to Django Core.
Okay.
I mean, it's interesting specifically seeing what Laravel is doing in terms of what Django, if it were for profit and we wanted to buy Lamborghinis for ourselves, what we could do, because they're pretty good with the marketing and making changes. You know, they have hosting option, they have a starter kit, but we've also seen from WordPress Rails a little bit that when you have a one figure at the top, it can go badly quickly. So I guess that is the tension.
Yeah, it is the tension. But to me, it's definitely like we can get the best of both worlds. Like for me, it's interesting because I do have my current experience with Wagtail, which is quite a successful Django package that's built by my big community now of different companies, and those companies definitely find ways to collaborate for their own commercial interests, but not at the detriment of the open source ethos. So yeah, I do think that there is ways for us to be more explicit, and even if Django were to stay community driven, find occasions for those commercial interests to help us financially with things that would make a difference for the users.
I think as well, if we want to solve our community goals, we have to find a way of pulling more money in, because the bottom line is, even if you widen, so okay, the old Django core was all white men, but even if you widen to the third-party package system, it's still men. And why is that? And that's because of economic privilege, right? Men are the economically privileged to be, or European or North American men, global North men are privileged to be able to spend the time it takes to maintain a package. And we have, you know, plenty of contributors beginning, but it's that sticking with it over time that we can't do without helping to put some lubricant in those tight points of, you know, the economic vice, right? We have to do that. Otherwise, we won't achieve our diversity goals.
Yeah.
Well, and what you said, Thibaut, we had a discussion with Marietta Wijaya, who's Python core developer, that we actually recorded before this, but it will come out after because we want this episode to be out for the board elections. But she was talking about how Python is structured. And for Python, most of the board is people at big corporations, you know, Microsoft, Meta. So that helps with funding and that helps with the decision making. And we were talking to her about the fact that Django doesn't have that at all. I mean, if you look at Django cons, you look at most of the board, it's generally individuals, you know, consultants, small startups. I guess Torchbox Wagtail would be as corporate as we get, but those stakeholders are really missing in a way that, you know, in terms of funding, but also that perspective of, I mean, there's so many multi-billion dollar companies built with Django, and yet they're, as far as I can see, they're completely absent from any technical or community discussions. And I don't know if that's because they've done their own forks. I don't know if that's because they just put all their money into Python as opposed to Django. But it is, you know, hearing you talk about it and Marietta, like, it is a real weak spot that they're not represented and they're not contributing to Django itself. Yet we know they're, you know, like where I live in Boston, there's a company, Klaviyo, I may be saying it wrong, Klaviyo, that just went public for like $10 billion. And I don't know anyone there. You know, it's a Django company. And I live 2 miles from there. So that's a weak spot. I don't know, I have an answer for it, but
yeah. If you ask me, we should be hungrier as a community, and we should be looking for those people who have access to the big prodigal purse of funding. I guess in my specific example, for example, the Wagtail people, we are able to find those companies and get them on board as feature sponsors. And I do have quite a big list of who at Google, who at NASA, who at, I don't know, Mozilla is using Wagtail and therefore Django. And we do have this list now with the fundraising working group as well. And very interested to go looking for those people. So if you're listening to this and you're already within those organizations, definitely do reach out if you think there's some room for us to make something happen. But if not, we will reach out to you and try and find the right stakeholders in those communities that, you know, those people are interested in supporting open source. They generally are, but you need to make your projects compelling enough, you know, have the annual report, understand what they're funding to close the loop.
Well, one thing you just said is feature sponsorship, right? Like there's a dedicated page, you know, how to sponsor Wagtail, where you kind of lay it out saying, do you want a specific feature? Here's the funding. Here's all these things. There's nothing like that in Django, right? Like we want Meta's money, but we're not going to make any promises. So that does seem like, and maybe this, I'm sorry if the working group is already doing this, but like having that list of features and saying, hey, do you want to not just have this be in Django, but do you want the public recognition for this, in the same way that there have been discussions about, you know, our fellows, like there has to be a big corporation that would want to have, you know, Django fellows sponsored by XYZ for 3 to 5 years. It's a drop in the bucket if we can position it correctly. And then it opens up talking about all these other things, as opposed to the current status where we just barely raise enough to keep the lights on. And so this is all kind of wishful thinking.
We do currently have the Google Summer of Code program, where we do create this list of features that are potentially available for people to step in. And we do get, you know, financial support from Google in that way to run this. So it's not nothing, but definitely I want us to look at other similar programs like Outreachy, where there's room for there to be more funding. And also outside those programs, as you say, just have that page somewhere on a website that states, okay, like here are the top five features that we definitely want to make happen no matter what, but we think are compelling enough for someone to step in and fund.
That just sounds really exciting. It almost makes me want to run for the board, but
you have to recirculate and refresh yourself a bit before. Well, we only have about 10 minutes left. But we haven't asked at all about Wagtail, Torchbox, your day job, Google Summer of Code. Maybe just if you could, like, Wagtail to me is this amazing ecosystem that has some, you know, crossing into Django itself with you, Sage, and others, and yet it also just feels completely like a whole other realm. So maybe how did you get involved with Torchbox and Wagtail, and, you know, independent of Django, if that's possible, what's the future there?
Well, first off, I hate that it feels like a separate thing. It is a Django package like any other, and it is installable on any Django project out there. I want to make that crystal clear. But I guess it has its own success outside of Django. It is probably the most popular code management system in the Python world by now. It has on the order of 10 to 50,000 websites powered by Wagtail. It's been around for 10 years as an open source project. And yeah, I guess compared to Django, that's what makes Wagtail more interesting, is the open source project is managed by a core team that's heavily skewed on people from different organizations. So I think the Wagtail core team at the moment is 21 members, half of which are affiliated, with agencies that create projects with Wagtail, and the other half is organizations that use Wagtail in other ways. And yeah, from those agencies, the most prominent by far is my employer, Torchbox. Torchbox started Wagtail in 2014. As an open source project, just like any other. Definitely then it was a Torchbox only project, but we've moved it quite far from that by now. And I think there's only about a third of the core team at the moment is Torchbox people. So yeah, I guess me at Torchbox, I'm doing product for Wagtail in a kind of leadership position, and also just day-to-day development, day-to-day marketing, and working on projects. An example of a project I worked on recently is the London Museum website. So, you know, I do coding now and then. We are hiring, by the way, I should mention that. We're looking for a CTO and a senior developer at Torchbox. And yeah, Torchbox, I guess, is the kind of company that makes it possible to have a bit of work on, you know, for-profit projects and also on open source, hence Wagtail. So to me, it's very interesting as a point of comparison, because by virtue of Wagtail having more of like commercially interested companies behind it, we do have quite a bit more considered efforts on marketing and sustainability of the development of the project.
Where can someone find those job listings if they're interested in applying?
Well, definitely.
We'll put a link in the show notes, but where do you do that?
Toshbox.com/about/careers. we've had our very successful CTO, Tom Dyson, with the company for quite a while, one of the founders of Toshbox. And with Toshbox becoming employee-owned, that's kind of a natural point for Tom to make some room for other people. And yeah, the CTO role right now is going to be very popular, I assume. It's quite a cool company to work with.
I would think so. Well, we haven't even talked about accessibility. We have links to talks and articles you've written, and you know, maybe we don't need to spend time on that just because there's so much out there. But Carlton, what else were you going to say?
Well, I was just taken by what you were saying about the Wagtail core team, and contrasting that with Django, where there was a core team, but then it sort of withered on the vine, and, you know, as people went off and did other things, and what it didn't have was a mechanism to refresh itself. And so there was, you know, the last 5 years before the core team was devolved, no one was added to it. There was, you know, it was dead essentially. And so the core team was removed and the steering council was put in its place. But the steering council didn't take on that leadership role of a core team. It didn't drive the development board. And I think that's what's been missing. And just talking to you now, Thibaut, I think that's, and you know, before, but talking to you on this show, it's like, yes, this is what we want. And this is the exciting opportunity we have now, is to give Django another burst of direction. It's managed to do very well, and it's matured very nicely. I don't think anybody, I guess 10 years ago, nobody thought it would ever get to be 20 years old, right? But it has. So, okay, what are we going to do on its way to 30 and 40?
Well, nobody told me that when I was learning Django 10, 12 years ago. I mean, it's like anything, right? From the outside, it seems like this monolith, you know, this big stable made out of granite thing. And then you get in the inside and you're like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, but also things need, you know, maintenance and improvement.
No, just but like anywhere else. Okay, but just give you one example. Why isn't the DSF budget already bigger than it was? Well, because the DSF budget was sized to keep Django going and then wind it up gracefully if that ever needed to come to pass. But no, that's not ambitious enough. Let's keep it going, but also push it forward. So, okay, let's 4x the budget, as Jacob was talking about at DjangoCon recently.
Well, and that's explicitly, you know, Frank Wiles, who was president for a while, I asked him at one point about this, and he, you know, basically said, yeah, like the point, one of the major points of the DSF was to fund Django, and if it ever died, to have enough money around to, you know, not burn all the bridges as it withered on the vine. But that, yeah, that doesn't seem to be the trajectory that we're on.
I think I would have definitely agreed when I became elected as a board member, but I'm hoping that we've made improvements by then. But beyond that, definitely, I think it's very helpful to us if people hold the elected officials and the steering council accountable to this. We do have the responsibility to have Django grow as a framework and community, and it only helps us to have people out there remind us of that. I guess if you want to definitely help there without running on the board, comparing ourselves to the other frameworks like the Laravels and the Rails, and even comparing ourselves to Wagtail can help quite a bit in understanding what's possible, I suppose.
Well, and there's, like, the fellows have a report that they put up on the forum now of weekly things, and I know that there's minutes, there's public minutes and private minutes for the board that the secretary is in charge of that we try to feature on the Django News newsletter. But there is a, I don't know how to say, like, not a lack of accountability, but only people on the board know how well or poorly the board is functioning. And so that's a double negative, right? Because people who are doing lots and lots of work aren't recognized. And then people who, you know, have changes in their personal or professional lives and maybe can't make the commitment, that's also not acknowledged. So there's, yeah, you know, there have been cases where people probably shouldn't have been on the board, and the mechanism to do that is not specific. They're sometimes they can be asked to step down after a while, but usually they sort of filter out again if personal and professional things come in the way. But that feels like something that could be, you know, if you miss two more board meetings in a row, maybe you're out or something. It could be explicit at some point.
I definitely think it's very, very essential for us to have a better culture of feedback in open source, and of letting it okay that sometimes other volunteers will criticize your work, and that it's okay to take a step back. I just yesterday I looked at a very ambitious proposal for a reset of the steering council that involved very specific commitments on how many meetings per week you'd have, and with whom, and how often you report. I might be taking things slightly too far, but I really like the idea of us all being much more transparent about what we're doing, and I guess comparing that with, you know, what people have committed to earlier on. In the board specifically, it feels to me like we need to steal lots of methodology things from the agile world and have OKRs, as an example, have specific retrospective sessions that we share the results of, so we know exactly what we set for ourselves and how we perform against that.
It feels to me like there's a whole wave of young people who weren't around 5-10 years ago in the community now, who have loads of energy and loads of ambition to push Django forward. And first of all, it's like, well, to all those people, do stand, do put yourself forward, do it. But For the people who were around, how do we step back and get out of the way, so to allow that, other than just step out and get out of the way?
How do you gracefully deprecate yourself?
Yeah, exactly. Like, because it just feels like if we could just sort of take the baton and put it from one hand into another hand, Django's got everything it needs to go forward.
I'll stop you right there. You're doing great at this already. Things like Django News, the Django Chat, Jeff Triplett's Office Hours, people, you know, stepping in leadership position, Django Girls in the Kernel Space. That's exactly what we need for people who have been around for a while to let others step in. So to me, all those initiatives that are about making other people more visible, that's spot on.
You almost need like a, what do they call it? Like an emeritus board or, you know, something where you're kind of out to pasture, you're retired, but you still maybe know something, like you could still be called upon if... If there's, because there's so much institutional knowledge that is lost, right?
Yeah. Like,
that it shouldn't just be that once you step away, like you're just, that's it, right? Because I feel like there is that period. I mean, Carlton, you stepped away as a fellow. There is that, you do need to kind of take a hard break from the board or steering council or whatever for a little bit. But then you're still probably around and available and could be helpful if you're asked. But there isn't that mechanism to ask, I don't think.
Yeah, we need to get much better.
I don't have an answer for that, but
I think we definitely need to get much better as a community at having those communication mechanisms between the different groups. You know, we're split across 7 different communication platforms, and it takes a while just to know who's where. And I think if we spend a bit more time being more intentional about how to reach out with the different groups, we'd have quite a few improvements there. So you mentioned past board members. Definitely, as a secretary, I'll be in touch with all of them to ask them whether they intend to present themselves again for the next board elections, and also to ask for their intentions as far as after the board, what they plan to do and how we can, I guess, make the most of, you know, their motivation and their expertise.
Yeah, and if I could make one suggestion, if someone's thinking about running for the board, so I think it's crazy there isn't an email list for Django people. I mean, it's great that we have the Django News newsletter, but that's only has 4,000 subscribers. If the homepage just had an email thing that was like, just be notified about official blog posts, there's no way we wouldn't get hundreds of thousands of people on that. And it seems to me that it shouldn't be the Django Chat podcast. It shouldn't be the newsletter to get out some of the communicate. You know, it shouldn't be all these different communities. There should be an option for something there. And so that would be, if I were going to run for the board, I would really push to make that. I mean, technically, it's not hard to do, right? It's just sort of pushing through people who might be a little bit against that. But that's always been one of the biggest problems, is there's no consistent way to reach people. And you know, we don't, like, there's no email solution, right? If you go to the homepage, you scroll to the bottom, the forum's not on there. I have a PR open. I should add to put the forum there. But it's the Google News, you know, Django developers and Django users, which are already kind of outdated and also deeply off-putting to probably anyone under 40. So
anyone over 40 as well as
I mean, me too. But yeah, I don't know. Anyways, I just throw that out there. Like, that's, someone wants to come on the board, and like the only thing you're going to do is put an email box on the homepage, and just use whatever software you want for it. Like, that would be a win in my book.
Yeah, I agree 100%. We've been discussing redesigning the homepage, like just this very DjangoCon actually, and it would make quite a big difference for us. I think Django users, it's about 50,000 people. And definitely, I like the idea of making more use of that as a like renewed communications mailing list. We have that for Wagtail as well. This week in Wagtail, it works really well. And I think there's no reason that Django couldn't have that.
And it doesn't even need to be a weekly thing, is what I'm saying. Like, it can literally just be the official posts, which come out less than that. But yeah, okay.
we'll do it. I really like this idea.
Right. Tell us your favorite thing about DjangoCon US, and then we'll wrap up there.
To me, you know, the tech talks, I've seen them many times, and I can see them online. So favorite thing by far is just the people, obviously. I spend way more time in the hallway than in the actual conference rooms. And the community vibes in the conference are amazing. So it does make me, I'm feeling very lucky that I get to attend those events, and makes me feel great about the future of the community. I guess just one last plug maybe is next year we have DjangoCon Africa as well. I feel like there's lots of room for Django to grow quite a bit there. And yeah, I'm looking forward to attending that too.
All right. Well, we'll have links to everything in the show notes, but especially if you're thinking about the board, October 25th is the deadline. Nominate yourself or someone who you think should be on there. So thank you, Thibaut, for making the time.
My pleasure, of course.
And we're at djangochat.com. We'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you know you can sponsor this podcast and reach thousands of engaged developers? Well, you can. Look at the Sponsor Us section on the djangochat.com website for more information.